Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Welcome to the Round 18 Super Footy Podcast for TAB. Who are you backing? I'm Scott Gullen. I'm surrounded by royalty here, and it's good timing because a massive news story has just broken. Welcome, Mark Robinson and John Anderson.
Hello, Scotty.
And more importantly, Brian Taylor.
More importantly.
In the
not
house.
More, not more
well,
important.
He is because Alan Richardson has just parted ways with St Kilda, and you're a good friend of Richo.
Bit of a shock. Oh, no, was it a shock? No, it wasn't. We all knew it was going to happen, didn't we? We all knew that he was in a bit of trouble and that sooner or later something was going to happen. I mean, you hope a good guy like that, who's a really good coach as well, could get through that really tough stage. But obviously, I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago and it was an interesting conversation. But obviously, he hasn't been able to hang on.
Did you think some people at St Kilda were out to get him?
Not so much out to get him, but out to get someone else in, I reckon. I reckon there was a fair bit of that. I mean, is this his seventh year, Robert?
Sixth year.
So
no finals.
Probably a fair run, isn't
he's
it?
He's had a good run.
Yeah,
he's had a good run. And it goes without saying, I know Richo a little bit. He lives around the corner. Not around the corner, out in the sticks. He's a really classy gentleman, and I mean that. And people often say, you know, Richo, is he hard enough? And because Richo was so respectful to the media, okay, like he would never belittle any media. If the cameras are on, even without the cameras, some coaches will say, that's a stupid, what are you saying? What are you doing? What a stupid question. Richo would never do that. So he had this persona of people asking, is he hard enough? Is he hard enough behind closed doors? He's like all other coaches. He's a nutcase. He's got his nutcase tendencies. And no doubt he went really hard, but his persona was a very calm, classy, considerate, empathetic man. He had a meeting with Matthew Finnis yesterday afternoon, and Richo, you know, people say he was sacked, and he probably was going to get sacked. And he said, no, let's do it now. Let's go now. So he walked as much as they said, you're not going to go on.
2 months ago, Brian sat in this room and spoke about Alan Richardson, how he was the coach of the year to that stage for him. And this was after the first five rounds, Bart?
Yep.
They'd won four or five?
Yep, lost to Fremantle by 5 points.
So to say he was coach of the year was probably fair enough, because everyone was saying, most didn't think St Kilda would make the finals, and they were in good shape at that stage. It just shows you how fickle football is. Mm. And then he loses players for Jack Stevens, virtually hasn't played since then.
The most important player they lost, without a shadow of doubt, their most important player was Jarryn Geary, which is about round five, round six. So they won four from five. Geary gets hurt, comes all the way back. I think he plays in the China game, does his leg, and he's out for the year. Geary's played five games this year. He's their captain.
Robertson, very important.
Robertson is their halfback flanker. He's their intercept down there. Jack Stevens maybe is their best player. So those three players, but Jarryn Geary's leadership on the field, absolutely, desperately missed. He played five games.
So it leads us to who coaches St Kilda now. And Scotty, you can have a crack first.
Well, the popular belief out in the rumour mill world is that Brad Scott, because of his relationships with people at St Kilda, including Simon Lethlean, is front and centre.
Very awkward. I can't see that happening. I think that's a political bomb, that.
You reckon that's just not going to go well for him? If Scotty gets on and then they have a bad year, it's just going to be disastrous.
The fans will go crazy. Yeah. So I think that's a really awkward situation for the club. Andrew Bassett has just released a statement just before we jumped on our podcast, saying that speculation that there's been a predetermined decision made on the next coach is absolutely false. They haven't got.
So this might hurt Brad Scott if he wanted the job, potentially.
It remains to be seen whether Brad Scott wants to coach next year.
That would be a risk, in my opinion.
It may be a risk, but he is, I've been told by someone close to him, that he is weighing up not coaching next year, or not putting his hand up.
Now, if the best job in footy was available and one of the big gun teams was available to coach right now, I reckon he would be saying, "Well, I'll delay the holidays."
One of them's Carlton, Brian.
Yeah. Well, so the point is, do all the coaches that are available, do they want to coach St Kilda? Do you want, especially if you're a first timer and you haven't coached yet, are you going to jump into St Kilda and hope that you can resurrect things?
But Brenton Sanderson's a good case in point. He coached Adelaide for 3 years, took him to a prelim final in his first, Scotty? First or second year? I think it was first year. And he's now at Collingwood. He was recently asked about it. He said, no, if I was offered a job, I wouldn't take it.
I wouldn't?
No, not now.
Right.
Not at this stage of my life. He's got young kids. Brett Scott has got two children under five. Now, Brett Scott's been coaching for 9.5 years. He was in football for a long time before that. He's a bit smarter than that. He's not going to say, I'm going to coach just because the job's there. It's bigger than that, Barge. It's his family's bigger than that. No, it is.
I don't like the way going, like you disagree.
If you're someone like a Reece Shaw or a David Teague, and this is the one chance you might get in your life to coach a senior side,
for them,
you take it.
Yeah, okay. No doubt you take it. Brad Scott's a better person not coaching in a family sense. Because
who wouldn't be?
He is in a far better place living day to day than being concerned 15 hours a day with what's going on at the North Melbourne Football Club.
It's intriguing, you know, because Brad Scott and Alan Richardson are really good mates, because they were the head of development at Collingwood together. They were a great duo act when they were at Collingwood together, and now they're in this situation.
Then they joined AFL3. Yeah. No. Alan did.
It's weird.
It is.
But all I'm trying to say is that there would be some coaches out there that perhaps have coached before that would say, no, I don't want that job.
Not fair call. What happens if Brett Ratton, who I think does want to coach again?
Absolutely, he does.
Okay, so he comes into St Kilda. How many games we got left? Six games left. They win 4 of 6 and are highly competitive in the other two. Does that just about do it for Brett Ratton, who we know has been involved in premierships with Hawthorn as an assistant? We know had a 50% winning record at Carlton. We know arguably shouldn't have been sacked at Carlton. I reckon when he got sacked, they lost to the Gold Coast.
They lost to the Gold Coast. He sat in the coach's box for about 5 minutes staring into the abyss.
And they'd won 3 of their last 4 before that. They were looking for a reason to sack Brett Ratton at the time because they wanted to get Mick Malthouse in.
Yep.
At round 10, they were talking
about Mick. I'll say now Brett Ratton will coach St Kilda next year.
He's every chance. He's every chance. And it's not just about performance. It's not about win-loss. That's not alone about win-loss. It's about the personality, the empathy, and all those sort of words now have taken over a lot of the coaching selection criteria. Brett Ratton, Chris Fagan was taken by Brisbane at age 55. Mm. He got the job because his empathy and care just shone out in the interview. And when they brought in a sort of specialist person, after they finished interviewing Chris Fagan, they said, you might as well just call the rest of the interviews off. He's got it. He's the man.
But they knew from day one who they wanted. They targeted him.
And when he went up there, blown away. Absolutely blown away. Now, Brett Ratton's, how old be Ratton now? Your age, Bailey? What are you, 53, 54?
Yeah, a bit younger than me, so 53 probably.
Yeah, like he's had a lot of life experiences, good and bad. He might be the right person to kill
him. Power's intoxicating. Where else would these blokes get the opportunity to be in control of that many people in that job? Don't underestimate that. Mm. That you are, you tasted it. You coached Paran in the VFA for 3 years and got us to a couple.
I was in
involved.
Charge of myself and no one else.
You did okay. But even with that VFA club, you just got a sense all the supporters. You're in charge of them effectively too. It's an intoxicating role.
And I always find it staggering that the moment you step away, so you're this person you're hard to get to, and you're the coach of a senior club and you hold such great power, as you say, Ando. The moment you step away, he's back to being Alan Richardson, the electrician, isn't he? It's sort of a weird sort of coming down, isn't it?
I've got an idea for Alan Richardson and where he should go. The AFL should ring him. His kids are grown up. Rizzo just bought a farm up near Yay. If I was the AFL, I'd ring him up or I'd get Stewie Jew and say, hey, Richo, we need a really strong development
because he was at the time the best development coach in Australia.
And that's why he was the most sought after development coach. Yep. Clubs went after him, Carlton. Essendon, he went over to Port Adelaide. Gold Coast, they want to strengthen their field. I reckon Richardson wouldn't be perfect.
I like it. When Brisbane was a basket case, which is only 4 years ago now, I would suggest that AFL, Gillon McLachlan rang a bloke called Greg Swan and said, Swanee, we want you to go up there. And Greg Swan had done 7 years at Collingwood prior to that and 7 years at Carlton. And Gillon had great faith that Greg Swan would be the right person. Then David Noble would have been the same gig. He would have been brought in by the AFL, and the AFL should be very pleased with itself for the job they've done at Brisbane.
Mm.
The AFL cops plenty of knocks,
but what
they've done with Brisbane has been outstanding.
Mm. Yep.
And those people were put in, they were handpicked by the AFL. I'm not saying Fagan was, but the other two were.
Yeah. Yeah, Richardson would be perfect. He really would be.
With Richo's reign, if we look back, what went wrong? He had 6 years at it.
Well, he took over a club that's struggling. He took it over from Scotty Waters. They had retirements coming for the...
He had
veterans.
Some hard decisions.
He took over a club without great leadership. They're just rudderless. The leadership at the top end of the administration in years gone by, I think it has been.
Did he make. So Mark Neil, we may look back on, say, Neil, he made an obvious mistake by appointing Trengove and Grimes as captain before their time, or going too hard too early.
Too hard too early.
That was what he. So with Alan Richardson, was there one thing he did which you'd look back and say, I shouldn't have done that?
Are you suggesting that the retirements or the forced retirements of Nick Riewoldt and Lee Montagne?
No, I wouldn't necessarily. They were the same time, weren't they?
They were the same time. He wrestled with keeping Lee Montagne on, but he believed that Nick Riewoldt was cooked, and Nick Riewoldt believed that he could go on.
I think Montagne should have stayed. Robert, I'd look back at Brad Scott with North Melbourne. Ferrito, Petri, Del Santo and Harvey shouldn't have all gone at the same time. Harvey should have played another year.
Yeah, I've read your piece on the weekend.
I mean, the thing about Riewoldt is, like, he moved him on because he had other players that needed time and footy, and those other players unfortunately got injured and McCartan's a good example, been able to play the game. So in hindsight, it would have been nice to have Riewoldt still there.
He was struggling at the end, though.
Because he was trying to get...
He was struggling. Yeah. And he was such a powerful figure inside the club.
He made the right decision because he needed to clear the way. He was such a strong person.
No doubt.
That he drew attention and people to him, and he drew the way they wanted to play to him rather than the way they wanted to play as a club.
Inside the club, he's a champion, Nick Riewoldt, no doubt about that. And he's very demanding on his teammates. So when Rui was inside the club, when he was still playing... He didn't hurt other people, but he sort of pushed down their leadership capabilities, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So they needed new leaders.
Mm.
Yep. I don't think that was a bad decision. They went 12 wins, 12 wins. So they had crap year, 12 wins, 12 wins. Last year just fell apart.
This year at four
wins from five games. I thought, this is fantastic.
He got that list to where it was probably at.
He got the most out of that list.
History says he could coach, but circumstances didn't prevail to allow him to fully exploit that.
No,
ability.
Administrators who don't really understand the game that well have assumed that. Like, I'm talking the top end. I'm not talking...
Are you talking about Peter Summons? Are you talking about Matthew Finnis as chief executive?
I'm talking about all of them. Yeah, absolutely all of them. I don't think they've got much of a clue of how football's played and what's required. They may have a clue how the bottom line works, but in terms of the top-end leadership, I don't think it's been very strong at St Kilda.
All right. Now, we'll wrap up St Kilda with one word from each of you. Who will coach them next year, BT?
Mm. Oh, boy, it's...
Any
a tough one.
Fielders?
Look, I think Ratten's probably the obvious one for me. I think Brad Scott will probably pass on St Kilda.
Mark?
I know it's going to be awkward, but I think Brad Scott might be in there.
Okay, I said Ratten before.
Ratten. All righty. Now, moving on. Gold Coast. We might as well go to another team that's struggling.
Go to Richo's new team.
Yeah, you've mentioned them. 12 losses in a row. I mean, what? The AFL at Gills come out again and said, we're backing them in as they're going to. What can they do?
When Brian was declaring Alan Richardson as his coach of the year after round five, I was saying the same of Stuart Jew at round five.
3-2.
They were 3-2.
Yep.
And they haven't won a game since. Have they won a
game
since?
They haven't won since?
A game since. No, okay. No. So that, and, but I stick by that. I don't deviate. And the floodgates were going to open with Gold Coast at some stage of this year, that they would start dropping.
Injuries, 100 they point. Get tired.
Yeah, they've had a heap of injuries, and they've got a very young list. How they let Jared Lyons go defies belief. And Stuart Jew, as much as I've wrapped him up, he has to be responsible for that. He dropped him twice last year for differing reasons, but Lyons should be in that midfield.
What was your take of him not happy with Don Pike having a little giggle in the opposition box?
Didn't see that.
He was just using that as a spur for his own club and team. Really.
Well, Don Pike was just laughing
at Eddie Betts did something. So he's a smart man, Jew. He saw it. The walls are caving in. He said, now they're laughing at us.
Cut to the chase, though, Robbo and Barge. Gold Coast are they're insipid. They've had
two 90-point losses. They play Carlton this week. If they will go down Carlton by a significant
but as a club,
amount, I'm not saying a coach is on the line.
I'm talking
but
about since
horrible.
They came in 2011 to the competition, they don't stand for anything.
And
it's been a disaster.
No, it's been a failure.
It's been a total disaster.
And they just got it wrong again. Like I've heard a lot of people say over the last couple of weeks about how they don't need low draft picks. They need mature players that can teach the group that they've got, and they're probably right.
The latest is Trade Lukosius. Go and sit down with him. Sit down with him in this room, right? And sit down. Do you want to go back to Adelaide? Are you going to ask for a trade back to Adelaide at the end of next year? And if he says yes, we'll say, right.
You're going now.
Right, we're going to trade you. Trade you now. We're going to bring in three players. Now, I spoke to Ben Dixon about this. This is Ben Dixon's idea, so I'm not going to steal it. We'll have Brad Crouch and Alice Yeoman.
They got to agree to go.
Yeah, well, that's happening. Whatever.
Yeah, search, I know what you mean.
Search wide. Isaac Ranton re-signed, so he won't be going. The big fella, his twin brother, King. Right, what do you want to do next year? Are you going to ask for a release from this club? Yes, I am. Okay, we're going to trade you now. St Kilda, let's talk. You want the King boys? Let's talk. We will have, Jack Billings, give us.
So Jack Billings, you're assuming that Jack Billings is happy to go to
Gold Coast? No.
Who wants to go to Gold Coast?
No, this is, may not go, but the club, the Gold Coast Suns, have to search for those mid-range players to recruit. They may not get them, but some may pop out of the system. But that's only one suggestion. It's only one suggestion. Get mid-age talent in there. Mm. I've heard 20 suggestions, BT. Mm. 20. And I don't know what the right one is.
No.
Do you keep all your kids and try and say, no, let's build a football club where you want to stay? Is that the right way? Increase money in the salary cap, $2 million? I asked Joel Selwood on Sunday, Joel, would you do a Luke Hodge? Would you go to Brisbane like Luke Hodge did? Play for a year, maybe coach. Do you want to get into coaching? He said, no. I told Chris Scott that story last night, and he said to me, what did he say?
Yeah, but Chris Scott hasn't gone to Joel and said, look, you're finished here. It's a different scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Joel thinks he'll finish his career there.
Do they need substance culture players? Do you need a Hodge?
How many Luke Hodges are there in the history of football?
There's one other, Joel Selwood at the moment.
Yep.
There's not many others. You're right, Anna. There's not many others.
Plenty of good leaders.
Now, premierships thinking, a few curveballs were thrown. Collingwood were outstanding. Are they back? West Coast couldn't score for 40 minutes. Are we worried about them? GWS have fallen off a cliff, maybe.
Nick Natanui gone for West Coast.
So have you changed your thinking at all?
No, I have. Not about those two sides. No. I've changed my thinking about Richmond. Richmond are back. Yeah. Richmond are going to win it. Richmond are the team to watch
$17
from here. Richmond are the team to challenge Geelong and West Coast. Are they $17 now?
They were when we started talking about it.
Richmond are the team for me. They just look ominous.
And they finished fourth. Geelong will finish top. They'll play each other in the bloody MCG in a home final.
Richmond wins. So they go in the prelim.
The Tigers play their last seven games at the MCG. Then their first final at the MCG. Then their next final at the MCG in the prelim final.
To be honest, it's a disgrace. Sorry. That is a disgrace.
But
it is.
Yeah, but,
for a football competition, the Geelong have fought for 23 weeks
to get home ground advantage.
And then the first week comes along and the AFL says, you're playing your final at the opposition's home ground.
No, but it's their home ground too.
It's not.
Geelong's home ground.
GM, HBO.
I'll tell you this, Rob. You will not hear Geelong saying any more about that.
No, they can't.
They can't now because it'll get in the players' heads. Geelong's recent record in finals is abysmal, as we know.
Yes.
The last thing, and they will be coming off a break, and their form after breaks is abysmal. They could be playing Richmond.
The last thing
they want is their players going there thinking, we shouldn't be playing at this ground. But anyway, it should be at that ground. I'm with you. I know you strongly.
Can't play down.
If 60,000 more people can get in.
10 people get in.
Now, that's
just a joke. I mean, it's a highway that just, it's all got potholes in it and crap.
You live down there, though, Ryan.
They're going to move it there, but it's not right. There's no other competition in the world. It's like United.
It's not right.
United. And if they
welcome, not going to change.
You're going to play Chelsea today.
But the AFL's full of against Chelsea.
Welcome to make it up as we go along. The AFL is
full of things that aren't right.
It's just another one. And it goes under the umbrella of, geez, we've got a unique game here.
Really? But that is not right.
No, it's true. What about Collingwood? None of you, have you dropped off a tad? I was hot on them first half of the year.
Yeah, there's still a chance. Look, they've got a tough run. GWS Richmond over the next couple of weeks, got Melbourne in the hunt, got Adelaide and Essendon to finish off. So they've got a really tough run, and it's all about getting yourself
bodies
in a
back.
Good position. Yeah. Penalty's a blow.
Taylor Adams comes back.
More out for a month.
Penalty mania a week.
Okay, will they play Stevenson straight away or not?
Yes, of course you play Stevenson.
Okay. Straight away.
Jeremy Howe close.
Yeah, he'll be back this
week. Tom Langton's a worry because Langton's still a bit unknown.
Mason Cox is a worry.
Mason Cox was good the other night.
Yeah, but he's a worry because he's hasn't
in,
got instinct.
What we're finding late in the year, which is really exciting, I mean, the Collingwood's performance on Friday night, they're forced to make positional changes, coaches. And what happens, these coaches make these changes and they have their match committee and go, gee, yeah, why don't we go again with him? For example, Jack Crisp. Jack Crisp has been a pretty good, really good halfback flanker this year. They throw him in the midfield. And he was magnificent. I think he was close to best of field
on Friday night. Part of their issue, Rob, they've had so many midfielders.
Yeah.
So a guy like Tom Phillips, a guy like Sire, Crisp, Greenwood, Varko, all these overflowing. Where do you play them? Still side bottom if they don't play in the midfield.
They played the half forward, half back. What's his name? The hyphenated name?
Hoskin Elliott,
half back the other night.
Yeah,
you should say that in your commentary.
Jordan Dugowie is probably the only one who's really lethal in another position as a forward. But Jordan Dugowie is a midfielder. That's where he wants to play.
Yeah, he went into the midfield as well on Friday night.
Except the other bloke's been able to play well in other positions.
But hey, West Coast were, I won't say they were dominant in that game, but they had it under control.
What about Charlie Cameron's brother? Where's he pop up from?
He's been fantastic. He was brought into the side, you know, at the expense, not the expense of Willie Rioli. He was out injured at the time. And they thought, oh, we'll just bring this Cameron in,
give him one game.
He's that skinny. Jesus, we hope he gets through and doesn't break in half. And, you know, he plays really well. I think he's two or three in his first game. And he's played the next four or five since. And Rioli's come back and he hasn't been dropped. They've got a great forward line, you know. When you look at the little nippers and the evasiveness.
Except Josh Kennedy's in a hell of a hole, Josh Kennedy.
Yeah,
he was awful the other night.
He's been awful for quite some time.
Remember Josh Kennedy getting up the ground and taking all those lead-up marks, which he's so good at?
Not doing it.
Cripps is a massive loss.
Big loss. Yep. Groin.
So you get Cripps and Natanui. Petrucelli will come back. He can play that kid. He didn't play on the weekend. He's kept out. But they're not what they were. Just when you think West Coast are about to dominate the competition, they do that.
I think they outcoached themselves on Friday night. They tried to be safe, didn't they?
Did Rocket talk about this? He was really hot on them. He said he's seen it a bit this year.
So what they do, they get ahead. They get ahead, Ando. Three goals, four goals. They don't put the foot to the throat.
No, they don't want to win by 60.
So they just control the footy. They took nine. This, for you stat heads out there, are you a stats man, Brian?
No.
In the last 25 games that West Coast have taken 90 marks or more, they've won every game. Mm. 25. And guess what? On Friday night, they took 97 and Collingwood stopped them. They couldn't move the ball. Mm. They just went too safe. Now, you, when the teams go safe and you're commentating, you're probably looking for something exciting to say. Talk about something not on the field. But
everyone plays safe these days.
So what happens when you're commentating and the ball gets kicked around and around?
Hoping someone will go against the team rules and chip it inside and take them on and go.
Then you'll go, oh, boy.
And he won't play for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
We're playing safe. Our Gilbert Gardner doesn't play. He plays no safety.
You know what
Gilbert Gardner, Barge, he's the bloke who picked Lockie Whitfield as best on the ground. in the GWS Richmond game on the weekend. Yeah, Gurley is a great guy,
terrific.
And he laughs about it now, but no one has mentioned Whitfield in the best anywhere else. The coaches couldn't find a vote for Lockie
Whitfield.
Had a bit
of a lock on him.
But he's seeing's believing. If that's what you think, is that what your eyes see? You stick with it.
Yeah.
Now, if you're Harley Bunnell, are you dialing Alistair Clarkson's number? Is he the only saviour for Harley Bunnell to play AFL football again?
Maybe. So the people called Hill who play for that football club?
Oh, they'll say maybe don't take Harley.
Maybe a package situation. Maybe I'll come.
But my point is Clarko's...
You bring my mate.
Clarko's the one who'll take a punt. No one, I can't see many others. I mean, Harley's had 4 years of injuries, same injury. We know how good the talent is, but do you take him on?
No. Harley's done.
Harley's cooked. I think you'd take a punt with the Hills for sure, or one of them. But Harley's cooked. He's finished. Yeah.
Too much baggage outside. You take him on and something happens outside.
If I'm Harley, I'm going to Germany, to the UK, to America to find the best sports doctor possible.
What, in hope that you can come back?
In hope that you can come back. Because, A, that shows an intent from Harley Bunnell that he hasn't always shown previously. Mm. I will do this off my own bat. I'll fly over there and go to wherever Max Rook went or whoever it is.
Dr. Franz Harkenstepper.
Yeah, that bloke. And
Max Rook's man.
See if his calf can be fixed.
All those blokes are starting to break down now that have come back from over there.
Well, they are. Hans, what's his name, didn't help. Anyway.
Now, Reece Shaw, Robbo, just before we wrap this segment.
I think it's a foregone conclusion. Yeah. Absolutely foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
And I think actually David Teague. I think David Teague is rocketing into favouritism to get the Carlton
job. Both clubs don't have to really move till the end of the year.
No, they don't. They don't.
But do you think North might? Overflowing.
The goodwill is
so why are they waiting on us? There's someone in a position at the moment that we haven't spoken about that they're hopeful
at
of
North?
Getting at either of
no,
those
I don't. I think no. it's I think it's Reshaw, then Daylight, Sundown, Daylight again. Carlton's the interesting one. There's no doubt, there's a report last night the players have gone to some senior people at Carlton and said, we want David Teague. Now, if it was Fisher or Dow or Petrescu Seaton, I'd say get back in your box.
But
if it's Patrick Cripps and Mark Murphy and some Walsh. Of these types,
well, what would they know? What would they know? Because
they've gone from the darkness under Brendan Bolton.
Yeah, they've had one coach in their life. They wouldn't have a clue.
But they're thinking he's the best coach they've ever had, then, aren't they?
There's people out there at Carlton with more knowledge than perhaps they have about picking the coach. So
what David Teague hasn't got, and it's going to go against him, he's got no idea about coaching a football club. He's been kept away from the marketing and the list management, the coteries. He's there to coach the football team. Now, you talk about big names. Carlton have always gone after big names. Let's go get Judd. Let's go get Pagan. Let's go get Mick Malthouse. Have they got the courage to say, you know what, we've got a really good coach here, and we don't know about the other parts, but he might grow into them, but we know he can do this.
Brian just made a very interesting comment. There are people at Carlton far better qualified than the players to select a coach. Yeah?
Meaning that
really?
The players there at the moment are very, very young.
If you name the coach, some of them are, some of them aren't. But if you name the coaching group who have been a panel that has sat down to select a coach, how many have got it right? Jason Dunstall sat in 2004 and said, this bloke has to coach Hawthorn, called Alistair Clarkson. Mm. But a lot more have got it totally wrong by picking people that weren't the right people, ultimately.
Okay.
So what qualifies someone to choose a coach?
So let's let the players run the club.
I'm saying
let's let the prisoners run the jail.
If I'm sitting there at Carlton, who's on their selection panel?
Let's go to Brazil
panel?
And have it their way where they just let anyone in.
Chris Judd's on it. Chris Judd was part of the panel that chose Brendan Bolton.
There's no, Mark there's no
part
recipe
of it.
That's ever been
100%. Lloyd's new on it this time. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, a lot of those people have been around footy for a long time. They would have seen coaches come and go, and they understand and have a better feel than the current bunch of young players who've only ever experienced Brendan Bolton.
Oh, I accept that. I accept that. But
that's all I'm saying.
But there's a lot of coaches chosen by well-credentialed people, apparently, who fail.
Yeah, true.
Who fail. So what is the science of picking a coach? I'm telling you, it's becoming more and more about, and I mean this, so much more about than coaching strategy. It is care and empathy, relationship, personality. There is no doubt.
Go to Dunstall and say, okay, tell us why, Clarkson. Go to Greg Swan and the people at Brisbane and tell us why, Chris Fagan. and from those two meetings, take away a blueprint for what you need.
I've got a blueprint, which I'm going to write about. I recently asked Jason Dunstall that question. Tell me, what happened? Because Dermot and Jason were sort of
fighting
a little bit. Dermot wanted Rocket Eat.
Yeah.
Gary Ayres. Yeah, he did.
I think Ayres it more than...
Because Dermot flew to Sydney to talk to Rocket. Meanwhile, Jason was on the board as well. And I said to him, well, how did you decide? He goes, mate, as soon as he finished talking, I said, he's told the stuff that I've never even thought of. I said, he's our coach. And he just set them all back on their heels with the way he spoke about footy.
And it is amazing what happens in footy. I won't mention the names, but there's a couple of coaches out there at the moment that have been... One of the players that's currently playing at a fairly good team said that I've learnt more off this particular coach who's just arrived in a week than I have off this other coach who we're all putting up as a possibility as a coach than I have off him in 4 years.
Can you write it down while you're talking to us?
We're about to appoint him the coach of a club. So work that out.
Okay, on that
note. Give us names, we will try and work it out.
We've got to go to the break because when we come back, Neville Bruns, it's 30 years this Sunday, well, not to the day, but it's 30 years since Geelong and Hawthorn had that epic grand final.
And 34 years, Scotty, since he was involved in the on-field drama with Lee Matthews at Princes Park, where he may give us some insight into that incident.
Tipping he will.
He'll up to you to get that out of him, Ando.
He'll be back after this break.
So we're set to go. The ultimate prize. Capacity crowd. The grand final. Burke and Villa. Down by Burke. This was Buse. The second opportunity for Buse. Down towards the half forward line. Ablett's in front.
Very interesting, Dennis, at that first bounce because Yates came off the wing and went straight for Dermot Brereton. Dermot's down on his knees, as you can see.
This is the Super Footy podcast, thanks to the Tab. And 30 years since Hawthorn stitched up your team in one of the greatest games of all time. And on the line, we've got Neville Bruns, who was a key part of that.
Morning, John. How are you?
In that particular game, everybody remembers Mark Yates taking out Dermot in the first seconds of the game. What some don't remember is you and Dipper and Andrew Buse, and I reckon Buddha Hocking, having a stoush on the members' wing. Take us through that in the very early minutes.
Obviously, it was a very heated start to the game, and I think it was about the second goal bounce that my recollection was that Dipper was going in to clean up Buddha, and I think Buddha was causing a bit of havoc as well, and Dipper had a crack at him, and I think Busey and I thought we needed to protect the young fella a bit, so we got involved with a bit of a scuffle, a few punches thrown. I don't think any were any more than a bit of a powder puff. But, Dipper then got us both in a headlock and had a bit of a merry dance with us, I think. So he was a bit of a giant compared to Busey and I. Yes, it was replayed a fair bit, I suppose. So I've got a bit of airplay. And if I remember correctly, and I don't think I actually told you this, that I think from memory, Darren Hinch felt sorry for Dipper. And I'm thinking to myself, God, he's twice the size of Busey and I, and he had us both in a headlock. So I don't know how he worked that one out.
Darren Hinch, I didn't know he got involved in it. So you played on Dipper in that game. He would have given away 15 kg, I would have thought.
Probably at least that, I think. Today, probably giving away at least 100 kg.
Yeah, you know, you're at your playing weight. You did get some help from your teammate, Gary Ablett, who managed to puncture Dipper's lung about the 15-minute mark of the first quarter. Were you aware that Dipper was struggling for his breath after that?
Look, I was right there when Gazza charged in and sort of did that mark over him, and the knees hit the back really hard, and it was a real whack, and I knew it hurt him. And I think as the game went on, there's no doubt I knew Dipper was, you know, struggling to keep up with me. And it's probably, I think that probably happened in a few positions throughout the game. And that's hence why we obviously in that last quarter started to get back into it, because I think we all sensed that there was a few sore blokes in both sides, but definitely some of their main movers were really struggling to keep going.
Nev Mark Robinson, are you a chatter or were you a chatter? Did you chat to Dipper throughout that game?
I wasn't a person to have a conversation with people, really. I think I went out, I was a very focused sort of player, and I was head down, bum up. There's no doubt I'd give some cheek and probably mouth off a bit, but I wasn't a bloke that like Ray Byrne, ex-Collingwood, Carlton, Geelong player. Ray would talk to you and drive you nuts talking about things that had nothing to do with football. So I definitely wasn't that type of player. I think I played to win and take no prisoners. I suppose that's the way I was. So no conversation really with Dipper at all. Dipper was probably a bit of a talker at times, but usually it was fairly aggressive talk too.
Hey, Brunsy, did you come away from that game thinking this is going to go down as one of the greats? Is there any stage during the game that you thought, well, this is another level game and this would be one that would be remembered forever? Did you think that?
No, not really. I don't think when you're in the moment, you realise just what that moment's like until you probably, you know, recall it a little bit later on and even probably it was weeks before you realised just how much of a war that it was between the two sides on the day, and it was, you know, like the last man standing type thing. And, I don't think at the time, you know, you realise the significance of what that game stood for. And, you know, obviously further down the track, you know, people probably pump it up. But as things get older and you get older, things get bigger and better, don't they? But it was no doubt one of the greatest, grand finals of all time. And, that still doesn't make it any soften on the blow of losing one. You know, I think losing a grand final is no doubt similar to a death in a family. You struggle with it, and I'm sure a lot of us still do today. You know, I've said to John that I've never watched the game. I've seen some snippets on TV when it happens to be there, but I've never actually sat down and ever gone through the whole game again. I probably will one day. I don't know when that will be, but I know the result, and I know it wasn't what I wanted.
Talk about some magnificent and memorable games between Hawthorn and Geelong. There's that game, the 89 Grand Final. There was the big comeback at Princes Park. I think you played in Neville, and I know you don't like talking about it. And the other infamous game was played at Princes Park, I think, 5 years earlier.
Yes, the game at Princes Park where we were, you know, up at 10 at half time and then they came back and knocked us over was one hell of a game. I didn't actually play in that. I was sitting in the stand and with an injury and, just happened to watch it. And it was one of those memorable games that, it just showed you just how beside Hawthorn were in that era. They commanded just probably the utmost respect as being one of the, you know, power sides for a long, long time, and they had some champions. There's no question they had some champions, but they learnt to play so well together. I think one of our problems is we probably didn't team up as well as perhaps Hawthorn did. They were a team of champions, but they also were a champion team, and we had some magic individuals, but we probably didn't butter up for each other as well as we probably could have or should have. And I look at the Geelong successful sides of 7, 9, 11 and just how well they played as a team. And I think that some of that was just what was missing probably in my era. We just didn't quite get that passion and camaraderie as well as we probably could have. That's something we probably could have improved on.
Brunsy, I know you follow the Cats still. You get the games regularly as a past player on down at Cadenia Park or whatever it's called these days. You would have seen Gary Ablett when he plays. When he plays this Sunday, he'll be booed by Hawthorn supporters. That's just what they do. Adam Goods went through it in the 89 Grand Final. You went through it because I was watching the game the other day, and when you got the ball, they were still giving it to you then. What was that like as a player to go through, have a crowd booing you?
John, yes, I do follow the game closely, and I get a bit annoyed with the booing that we do of opposition players. When it's continual booing for just booing's sake, sure, when a player does something, and he does probably deserve a bit of a whack across the ear, but from the crowd. But it's a hard one. Look, I guess in early days, it never worried me out on the ground. All it did was inspire me, and I think I've told you the story. There was once I played on, I think I only played on Dipper twice, and once was down at Cadenia Park, and I hadn't had a touch to about the 25-minute mark of the first quarter. And anyway, I took a mark or got a kick, and of course the Hawthorn crowd that was there gave it to me and booed, and that fired me right up. And I think I ended up being BOG on the ground because it just got under my skin a bit. But the thing that probably irked me more than anything was, you know, your wife and kids, young children sitting in your own children sitting in the stand, and they're wondering why their dad's being booed. Yeah, that sort of thing probably got riled me a little bit. And I have no doubt that Gary Jr. He's probably in that same boat, and anyone else who gets that continual booing. And, you know, even Danger, I find it ironic that Port Adelaide boo Dangerfield, and he didn't even play for them. But for some reason, they see him as a defector from South Australia to Victoria. So I sometimes find it quite bizarre why teams do continually boo players. But, look, I'm sure Gary will take it like I did the right way and just get it to actually work in his positive rather than the negative.
Did you only get it against Hawthorn?
Yes, I did. I don't believe there was any other side that booed me, you know, on a continual basis. It was really only Hawthorn, absolutely. The reason, and I understand to some degree as to why Hawthorn did boo me. I better be careful I don't say about the mentality of a Hawthorn supporter, because a lot of my mates are Hawthorn supporters. But what happened was, of course, with that incident with Lee, a lot of people thought I instigated the police action, which was a total load of crap. That was nothing to do with me. The last thing I ever wanted to happen was to end up in a court, and a lot of people at Hawthorn thought I was the one that instigated that legal action against Lee, and I think that's where it escalated from. And I think I actually, Jeff Kennett was a classic, he invited me, I'd caught up with Jeff a couple of times, and he invited me to be his guest at an RACV function, and that's how he put it across, and I accepted. And then he said, would you mind being my guest speaker? And I said, that'd be fine. And I'm thinking I'm speaking to RACV members, you know. And as it turned out, I get to on the day, and there's 145 Hawthorn corporate people in the big room. And here I am thinking, oh, well done, Jeff, you've got me here nicely. And then, of course, he's got the replay of the incident of Lee belting me on the screen, on two massive big screens. And then he reads out an excerpt from Lee's book and then asks me to respond on it. So he really put me in the hot seat, but I got out of it pretty well. And one of the questions I actually asked the crowd there was, you know, put your hand up if you booed me. Well, you know, two-thirds or more of the hands went up. And then I said, put up your hand if you realise, if you knew what, you had a good reason for me to boo. And only half the hands went up. And then I said, put up your hands if you think I instigated the police action. And all the hands went back up again. And I then told them the story, you know. And I think after, it was probably a good way for me to let the Hawthorn people know what really happened from my side of things. And that's what Jeff wanted me to do, was to actually talk about how it affected my family and my football, you know, and what the goings on were, you know, because all really people saw was probably, you know, what Lee did. And he almost in a way become a bit of a Ned Kelly folk hero for doing what he did, and you know, I'm sure he didn't mean it to go that way, but it sort of reversed itself on me. I became the bad bloke who's been with Jorah Lee's fist, sort of thing. It was quite ironic.
Hey, Brunsy, really enjoyed your time as always. Thanks very much for giving us 10 minutes today, and keep enjoying watching your Cats. Speak soon.
I will, John, and thank you very much for having me on the program.
Neville Bruns, how good was that? Now, gentlemen, good, bad, and ugly. We're not going to look back at round 17. We're going to throw forward. What do we like that's coming ahead? We've got Essendon, John Worsfold. We've sort of let him go earlier in the podcast.
3 weeks ago, we were on our podcast, Scotty, which you would have listened to.
I listened to every second.
Even though you weren't on. Self and Ando and
it's
Brian.
It's hard to believe I wasn't on.
Spoke about the future of John Worsfold 3 weeks ago. I was looking pretty
Has
hairy.
It changed?
Pretty hairy.
No, I've slogged to him, brother. I've stuck up for him all the way
you
through.
You did stick up to him. But they've won three in a row. Three come-from-behind victories. Two of them by single digits. Yeah. One by...
6, 10, and 5.
6, 10, and 5.
Well,
I tell you,
last week was a miracle.
I tell you the cliff edge that John Worsfold was standing on. He was on the edge and he was tipping over, and he gets 6, 5, and 10-point wins. Mm. If they were losses, he would have fallen off the cliff by now. That's how fine it is in football.
My good Scotty, is John Worsfold having gone through, what are we, 17, 16 rounds?
Yes.
Without having actually smiled once.
I'm not convinced he does any moves during the game. I was watching. He sits on that bench. I don't think he interacts.
Same look on his face the entire.
I don't think he does.
What do you say, Brian? When they
hey John, you've just won Tats Lotto, 105 million.
Surely it must be when the cameras go away. He must speak to someone in the box.
I'm not convinced.
Essendon fans, right? Essendon fans.
He doesn't. He just watches it.
Say to me, when the camera's on him, someone please tell him to at least pretend. Look at the player magnet board. Yeah. Look at the board. Do something. But that's not him. He opened up on the weekend about his family being away and how difficult it is with his kids. And he gave
because he's people may not know his wife lives in Perth. Yeah,
yeah, and the kids.
Yeah,
and the kids. So they see each other for 3 weeks. He didn't go to Gill's coach's dinner the other night. He said, "No, my wife and kids were over for 8 days. I'm not going to waste a night going to Gil's place." And when it hit me, I thought, "Okay, he's an assassin in the nicest possible way. Yeah. He's an assassin, and he's his own man, John. Now that ruffles people up. There's no doubt it ruffles people up, but he's his own man. So good on him. He's rescued a season, and they're a chance, and they're playing Adelaide, Ando.
Yeah.
Forget last week.
Jury's out on Adelaide. Jury's out.
What about Alice Springs this week? That'll be exciting. The heart of the nation game.
Where are you going?
It's a whole
West Coast play.
Yeah, Melbourne.
They play Melbourne.
They like Alice Springs.
Sunday afternoon.
It's a great place. It's the heart of the nation, Ando. Come on.
What's great so good about it, Brian?
It's going to be great to get in touch with the heart of the nation.
It's heart of the nation stuff. What do you mean? Because it's in the middle of Australia.
I am going up there for a week and I see all of it, yes.
Like what? What are you going to do?
Gilly's going to show me around, take me out to his camp, and I'm going to see a few
others. Yeah, that'd be good.
Santa Teresa, no, and a few places.
You've dropped local knowledge with Gilbert McAdam.
Yeah.
I would like that, I must admit. That takes you somewhere further into the psyche of a place.
Yep.
No, that's your good, Mark.
And I love Gilbert McAdam. He's one of the good for me.
He's been a great find.
He's totally natural, Gilbert McAdam.
It's been a great find this year.
I don't know if we can speak on this, but people expect Gilbert McAdam to be this slick TV performer. Gilbert McAdam has been Gilbert McAdam, and I think we shouldn't discourage him to be anyone else other than who he is.
Yep.
And if that means there's a few words wrong or whatever, or he's wearing runners or whatever, that's great.
What about when you guys put footage on Channel 7 of a player getting help down to the rooms, and then you'll cross to Gilbert McAdam and Gilly will say, "I can tell you, Brian, they've just helped player X down to the room
with a leg injury."
You know how Dipper became a cult figure doing that same
role?
Gilbert with his...
No doubt.
The same.
Yeah. He's been a great find, Gilbert McAdam.
I'm just not sure about the suit, the dress suit with the Adidas runners. I'm just not sure.
Ask him a little bit of LeBron in him.
Ask him when you're in the heart of the nation.
Well played. We'll wrap this up. Now we've got the TAB next. Giants and Collingwood. Injury riddled. Collingwood resurgent. What's happening with the money?
Well, not surprisingly, Scott, there's been plenty of money for Collingwood here. They are still the outsiders at $2, but as you quite rightly point out, plenty of injuries now for the Giants, sort of a la 2018. So they're $1.80, but the money momentum definitely with the Pies in that particular game.
And then Geelong and Hawthorn resume rivalry. I mean, doesn't matter where they are on the ladder, it's always tight.
No, look, it doesn't. You're quite right. And this goes back many, many years. And just because you're an outsider doesn't necessarily mean you can't win this one. But they're a pretty lengthy price here, the Hawks. They're at $3.30. Geelong bounced back last week. They're $1.34 favourites. We've got a handicap line there of 20.5 points.
And then Melbourne and West Coast are going into the centre of Australia.
They are in Alice Springs. I'm not quite sure who that will suit, but money is with Melbourne. Now, they're, again, lengthy outsiders, but with the news that Nick Nat is out of that West Coast Eagles side and might well be for an extended period of time. They've come in a little bit, Melbourne, from 290 to 270. We've got the Eagles there at $1.47 and a handicap line there of 14.5 points.
Now, the flag moves. It's a strange week. Geelong have kicked two games clear, but people don't seem to be embracing. West Coast stumbled. Collingwood had a little bit of a resurrection. What about the Tigers, though, in flag moves?
Well, they are the definite mover. Now, we've got the Cats at $3.75 ahead of the Eagles at $4. The Eagles from 4 out to 5. The two teams that did shorten up on the back of the weekend results, Collingwood and Richmond, both at $5.50. Not surprisingly, there's good money for both sides this week at those quotes. Brisbane have leapfrogged into the market. Looks like they're going to get a good spot, but it's Brisbane. People just aren't used to backing them at such a price. When you look at their form over the last few years, they're $9, but no takers. We've then got Adelaide at 21, but the big mover outwards, and again, this wouldn't surprise the Giants, in danger of missing the finals all of a sudden, $9 out to 21.
And the good old Brownlow medal, any movers? Patrick Dangerfield probably best on ground?
Yeah, he's come in a little bit, Scott. He's been 90-6. We've got Tim Kelly, the favourite there at 350, Lockie Neal at 4, Nat 5-5. And Dangerfield, you'd think out of those who played at the head of the market at the weekend, he would be the beneficiary of most votes there. He's been 90-6. Patrick Cripps at 7. The other one the punters want to be on this week is the Mont. Marcus Bontempelli. He was $26 a few weeks ago. He's into $11 now, and you'd have to think that he's right in the thick of things, but Tim Kelly, the favourite at the moment, to win the Brownlow.
Oh, I like the Bont. He's one of my men, Jared.
You could do worse, I think. and they're winning games, and they've got a pretty soft draw coming up, so you'd think there's a few more votes in store for the Bont before the season's over.
Perfect. Jared Duffy from the Tab, thanks again.
Thanks, Scott.
Well played, boys. Round 18 Superfooty Podcast.